You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
What is up, goat flippers? It's your host, Lurk. Thanks for checking out this episode of the Lamb Goat Van Flip Podcast. Visit lambgoat.com for everything hardcore and metal music related. Follow Lamb Goat on social media, give us a like on Facebook, and make sure you're following us on Twitter and Instagram at Lamb Goat. Head over to our YouTube page and you can find all of these podcasts in video format, plus other Lamb Goat bonus content. Make sure you subscribe and hit that alert bell so you're always notified when we release new episodes and or content. And if you're using Spotify right now, you can go ahead and search Lamb Goat and find our monthly playlist on there. If you are listening to us on a platform that you can either rate or review us, please do so and give us the highest rating. It helps us out. If you can follow us or subscribe, that also helps us out with the algorithm, so do so. And if you enjoyed this content, don't forget to tell your friends that you checked out the Lamb Goat Podcast. And if you want to follow me, the host Lurk, on social media, you can find me at Twitter and Instagram at LurkCity. That's LurkCity. Now, when you put this podcast on today, I bet you didn't think we'd be talking to somebody from the state of South Dakota. Actually, when you hear South Dakota, not much probably comes to mind. However, since 2015, Jeremy started a band called Earth Groans, and they have done a lot since then, and they're signed to Solid State. And they actually had both of their EPs come out in 2020, and they actually were my favorite releases, or some of my favorite releases for 2020. The Prettiest of Things was one of them, and then Waste, which was my favorite of the two. They're definitely good EPs. You definitely should check them out if you're into like early 2000s metalcore. And also, the band covered the Deftones, and that's hard to pull off. So, you know, kudos to them. Anyway, let's get it rolling with Jeremy of Earthworm.
Oh, yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh, yeah, this is good stuff. Oh no. Oh no, oh no! Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What is up? Welcome back to the show. Today I am joined with Jeremy Schaefer of one of my current favorite bands, actually, to be honest with you.
That's a lie. I don't even believe that for a second, but I appreciate it. I promise you, Jeremy. Dude, what's up? Grows. Hi. Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the show, man. How are things?
Dude, things are great. Well, they're good. Yeah, they're good. considering, you know, where we're at in the career, but I feel like things are looking up. I'm optimistic that things are going to be coming back this year. So, dude, things are looking up. We'll just say that.
Yep. It is. I think for you guys, it will be as things let up and you guys are allowed out. But people listening in may not know you, but they may have heard you recently. You guys just released a cover song of the Deftones, "Push It," "My Own Summer,"
and yes,
you also
"Shove It." Actually, "Shove It," not push it.
I was thinking Wayne Static.
You're thinking of Static X.
Yep. I'm always going to screw something up early in the podcast,
dude. It's all good. There's a lot of names out there. Real fun fact, I was like thinking about doing a Static X cover. So I thought that would have been fun. That song, Push It, would have been like a lot of fun to do. But they weren't quite as big of an influence, I guess. But I just thought it would have been a fun song to do.
Interesting. Well, you guys also last year released two EPs.
Yes. Yeah. We've been pretty busy. So far we have released 11 songs and have played zero shows in the last year. Super messed up. But hey, you got to keep on keeping on.
That's what they say. Joe Dirt would say keep it on. Yeah, that's what Joe Dirt.
Dude, yeah. And he's my all-time idol, so.
Of course. Yeah. he has sideburns, you got the stash.
Dude, yeah. I mean, it's close enough. I used to have a wicked mullet too for a lot of years. Not quite as badass as Joe Dirt's, but
Mo Dirt.
I was a big MacGyver fan growing up. Yeah. So,
what inspired the mustache to begin with?
It was totally a tour thing.
Because I mean, like obviously you start out like regular mustache, right?
Actually, so the mustache came first and I grew out of the mustache like a seed.
Right.
So mustache was a seed and then I grew out of it. But it was totally a tour thing. My bandmates were, they just kept saying, dude, you should grow a mustache for this tour. And I don't know why exactly. I guess just because like my mustache would just naturally come in. I wouldn't grow facial hair anywhere else except for my mustache. So they just kept pushing me like, dude, just let it go. And I was like, no, I don't want to be like a creeper. I want to like be taken serious and everything. And finally, I was like, all right, I'm going to go for it. And if I'm going to do a mustache, I'm going to freaking do a mustache. So I started growing it out for like probably 2 months. And everybody was like, dude, you actually look really good with a mustache. I was like, okay, cool. So I'm going to go for it. So yeah. That's how it started. Honestly, it was like, probably year two of Earthgrown. So if you go way back to early Earthgrowns, you will see Jeremy without a mustache and you will realize that he looks more like a creeper without a mustache than he does with a mustache.
Well, once you see someone with facial hair, when you see him without facial hair, it definitely is alerting. I at one point had like a Duck Dynasty styled beard myself.
Nice.
And one day, you know, I used to think about shaving it off every day. You know, because it just becomes like this thing, but you also like it. It's a love-hate relationship with something like that, which I'm sure you kind of can agree to.
The only time I hate it is when I'm eating, because then it's like all up in your business.
Right, you're biting on your I remember when I stopped growing my mustache out when I grew a beard because of it would interrupt. It would like get in my mouth and it would just hurt. You know what I mean? You'd pull your hair and it would just hurt. So I started shaving my mustache and said, screw it.
Yeah.
But, I just one day just shaved it off and it was completely different and I never went back.
Huh. Right on. On to bigger, better things, I guess.
Yeah, that's how I got this gig. So anyway, what led to releasing the two EPs separately and not as a complete album?
Sure.
Was it like a marketing thing?
I mean, part of our thing, if you go back and look at Earthgrowns, everything that we've done has always been EPs. So that was kind of something that we came right out of the gate with. We're like, we want to be an EP band. We want to release an EP every single year because I mean, times are changing. It's something different. You are able to be, I guess... You know, it almost gets to the point where you're not necessarily, it's not just about having music, but it's about being how relevant you are, you know? So it's kind of a strategy just to, I guess, be more present and relevant within the scene, give our fans new material more often. Not to mention, it can be kind of hard to listen to a full-length record, especially like in this day and age, I feel like people's attention spans are shorter. And I don't know, we just wanted to, I guess, pick, instead of having maybe five good songs and five filler songs, we're just like, we're going to write like eight songs and or whatever and pick the five best, you know. Mm-hmm. Content over quality, or quality over content. Sorry, I said that backwards. But anyway, so then when we started writing these two records, we're like, well, what if we told a story with two records? So that was kind of the whole thing is we wanted to have, you know, like a light, dark, you know, yin yang kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much what we wrote. So Prettiest of Things is lighter and brighter and prettier, more melodic, I guess, if you can say that about our music. Whereas Waste is darker, heavier, grittier. And even the lyrical content is a lot of darker things as opposed to what Prettiest of Things is. So just a kind of an artsy way, I guess, to tell a story. So that's pretty much where we landed. And we going forward after that, we're like, well, we had one record left of our contract with Solid State. And then, of course, with the way COVID is we could either do two EPs or one full length. And we're going to end with a full length. But the way COVID hit and is leaving the industry, we're like, well, let's just do two more EPs and call it good instead of waiting 2 years to release another full length. So, Yeah, so that's pretty much how that all went down.
Cool.
Was it? It's cool. It's been fun. Yeah.
Was it written all at one time, or did you write one EP and then write another EP?
I would say it was written at two different times because I wanted to be in two different kind of mindsets. Like musically and lyrically, it was written at two different times.
Interesting. And what is the story that you're telling between the two EPs? Or do you want to leave that up for interpretation to the listener?
Yep. So each song has a little bit different thing. But Prettiest of Things is talking about a lot of the lighter things and the things that we can find beauty on while we're here on this planet in this life. Things that, I guess, keep us here as opposed to Waste, which is talking about some of the harder things that we go through. For instance, and a lot of the songs are kind of oxymorons of each other. So, for instance, on Prettiest of Things, there's a song that talks about true love in a relationship and how the beauty that's there. And then on Waste, there's actually one of the songs that I talk about the divorce that I went through. So it's kind of the opposites in nature. On Prettiest of Things, there's a song that's all about just finding beauty within us and on here on Earth. And then on Waste, there's a song that is about self-harm and depression and suicide. So just finding, I guess, yeah, so that's kind of the thing is, like, we have a short amount of time that we're given here, and we need to make the best of it while we can, and just find the beauty in the things around us. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Silver linings and such.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I really noticed about your band when I started listening to it was how much it reminded me of an earlier time period in metalcore.
Yes. Yep, definitely.
And that's one of the cool things about the band. It is a newer version of that, you know?
Sure, yeah.
But it definitely has nuances of that, and it makes it very enjoyable. But like I've said many times on this podcast, I am a sucker for the dissonant chaos chord, or whatever you want to call it, squiggly
woos. Awesome.
So I
wiggly woos.
Yeah, I love those. So you know what I mean. Mm. I love this.
Yeah, I mean that's. I guess that's kind of sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that was kind of like when I was starting this band, I was like, that's what I want it to be. Is I want it to be like my early roots growing up, because I grew up listening to Norma Jean, Chariot, a lot of the early Solid State bands. And then, but then I wanted to pull also a lot of influence from a modern, or put a modern heavy spin on it. So
that's cool. How was it like growing up, one listening to those, you know, that Solid State bands, and then becoming a Solid State band?
A dream come true, honestly. yeah, I mean, we used to joke the early Earthgrounds days. We used to joke in the van driving to shows. Yeah. When we're on Solid State, you know, that used to be a common joke that we would say. And then it actually happened. Now it's like so wild and weird. I mean, obviously we're still like a small band on the label, but it's still like just to be a part of this family with so many of my greatest inspirations growing up is just honestly a dream come true. It's very inspiring and it's very cool.
How did it all work out? Did you guys submit stuff to them, or did they seek you guys out? Or
sure. So it was really weird. We sent them a press packet before we left for one of our tours, and just kind of on a whim, like planting, I guess, a bug for future, like so that maybe they hadn't heard of us, but now that they get the pack and they're like, oh, there's this band called Earthgrounds. They take this seriously. Maybe we'll just check them out. So that was kind of the hopes that they would check us out, see that we're busy touring. Maybe like further on down years down the road, they would, we'd be able to sign a deal. But, the day that they got the packet in, they emailed us and said, hey, we've actually been watching you guys for a while. Let's get on the phone and talk. So it was a cool, they were already watching us and we were just like sending it out there. And so it was like kind of a cool mutual thing, which was really awesome. So,
yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the band is from South Dakota.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm from South Dakota, and this is where we meet. And then nobody actually lives in the same state, so
another one of these bands, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like, but you gotta say you're from somewhere, and nobody's from South Dakota. I mean, no bands are from South Dakota, so hey.
It is definitely rare, and it definitely stands yes. out. So again, with a good marketing, but it seems to be an ongoing theme where a lot of bands aren't residing in the same area. You know what I mean? A lot of stuff is happening over the internet, or you know, when yeah. meeting up.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, honestly, like the way technology is, it's truly incredible because, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, bands would not be able to really be able to do it the way that we're doing it now. So it does allow for more options when it comes to that. But it's also harder on the opposite side. I feel like less people are dedicated to trying to make a career out of music, which, I understand that, definitely. But so it seems like it's harder to find dedicated members, which is why I feel like bands are oftentimes spread out. It's because it's hard to find members that all have the same goal and mindset within, you know, a small area.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because South Dakota is, you know, population-wise, less dense than most states. How is the scene there in Bismarck?
It's small. I mean, it's loyal, and there actually is a really good metal scene here, but it's definitely on the smaller side of things. But we also get very few tours that come through here, so when shows do happen, it seems like people get pretty stoked. And you know, it's a less oversaturated market as compared to, like, you know, say Denver. You know, Denver has, probably like 5 shows a night that people can pick and choose, what shows they want to go to. And here, South Dakota, you get like 1 show, 2, 3 maybe shows a month. So like you get a lot more stoked when there's a show that's happening. For so sure. People are more likely to come out.
And you were previously in a couple bands prior to Earth Groans, correct?
Yeah, some really terrible ones. The last band I was in, we weren't terrible. That was the only band I was in that wasn't terrible though. Yeah. Just metalcore. That was like the early Veil of Maya, and like Devil Wears Prada, melodic metalcore.
Okay, cool.
But we were a little more on the, I guess, techie progressive side, which I was always into a little, the odd time signatures and stuff like that.
Awesome. And speaking of like not being able to find members, how did the band get together in the, you know, in the beginning? Cause you guys are relatively yep. a new band in general.
Sure. I'd been in the industry for a long time. I own a recording studio here in South Dakota. So my normal job, my real job is recording bands. And I had been touring for years, and just through the years of, I guess, networking and recording bands and everything, had met these guys. And actually, Brady and Zach were in one of the bands I had recorded in the past. And I had known that they were passionate about touring, and that was something that they always wanted to do. But in the band that they were in, they weren't really able to do that. So I kind of reached out to them. I was like, hey, like, I am starting this band. If you guys like are interested, actually, sorry. What had happened was I had posted about something like really, I was trying to be all like mysterious and online, and I was like thinking about taking this to the next level or something stupid like that. And Zach knew exactly what I was talking about because we had talked about this project that I was writing. And so he messaged me right away, and he was like, dude, let me play in your band. And I was like, well, aren't you like going to college? Like that's not going to work. He's like, dude, I'm quitting college so that I can tour. And then Brady caught wind of it too, and they were both on board. So that's kind of how things got started. And then we just met Caden through somebody else just from that we had known within the industry.
Cool. Admittedly, I knew that story because I listened to Zach's podcast that you were on.
Oh, right on.
So nice. He hasn't done that in the last couple months.
No, so things have changed up for him and his life. I mean, so he's actually not in the band anymore. Oh. And either is Caden. They both actually quit. I mean, this is right around COVID time. And we haven't been like out there touring since, so nobody's really known that. But yeah, so really things have changed just in general. But so Zach is doing, he got like a real job doing working for a company and doing tutorials and stuff like that for camera and stuff like that.
Cool.
So I think he kind of gave up on the podcast thing because he was, I guess, more focused on working for a real company and stuff like that.
Interesting.
So,
yeah, mm-hmm. You guys were doing a little episode out back of the house there on tour. What tour were you guys on?
That's a good question. I don't remember what tour that was. I think it was O Sleeper tour, maybe.
Okay, cool.
Or maybe a Convictions tour, or I don't know. It's been so long, I can't remember.
So, how'd you get into recording? I'm assuming you're at your studio now with that backdrop.
I am. Yep. So this is my studio. I built so 11, 12 years ago. I bought an apartment complex right out of college, and converted a large section of it into my studio. Worked out really well. Got out of college, came back, and was trying to figure out where I wanted to move to further pursue recording. Because I had actually been recording since I was in high school. I got super obsessed with it when I was like maybe a sophomore or a junior in high school. I went to college for it. I got a tech school at a 2-year degree. And I was recording bands in my brother's house. He just like had this little purple bedroom set up. It's like, I was recording these death metal bands in this like tiny little feminine purple room. But it was great. I was obsessed with that. I loved it. So out of college, I came back here and I was just working a part-time job and I was touring in a different one of my previous bands before. And then recording bands out of my brother's house, trying to figure out where I wanted to go. And my boss at the time had told me about this place being on the market. And I was like, no, I don't want to live here. I got to move away. I need to get away from here. But this was after the housing market had crashed. So properties were going dirt cheap. And finally, my boss talked me into checking it out at least. So the guy brought me here. I looked it over and I was like, wow, actually this is a lot of space and it's, would be perfect to gut and like set up for what I want it to be. So that's pretty much what I did. Cause I got it for like $20,000 and it was, a ton of space and I converted a section. I have a band suite set up, for out of state bands when they come to record so they can wake up, roll over and walk into the studio and we can roll. It's been like a great scenario for me. I won't live here forever. But it's great for the time being while I'm touring. I can, I have the place paid off. So I can go on tour and live off of nothing for a month at a time and still come home and have a job. So,
yeah. And it's good at that point because, you know, even though you are a signed band, I'm sure at that level, checks aren't rolling in at every level.
Yeah, just because you're a signed band doesn't mean you make money. So, unfortunately, but yeah, that's the case. We're playing metal, so the opportunity to ever have our only job being music is pretty minimal. Mm. But it's okay. I mean, it's a passion. You know, if I wanted to make money, I wouldn't be in the music industry. So.
Right, and. For that, you know, some bands do end up doing that for a long period of time and making it a thing. Mm-hmm. So don't cut yourself so short yet, Jeremy.
Sure. I don't plan. I have nothing better to do, honestly. So
that's cool. So it was your idea to start the band. Like, where did the idea to get for your guys' sound and what influences the sound?
Sure. So after my last band had broke up, and like I said earlier, that was like a progressive melodic metalcore band. And I was just doing studio full time for, I think, 3 years. But that's the longest I had been without playing music for a long time. And I guess I started getting the itch again. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna write a project just for myself, a little solo project. And I was like, I want to just write something that I've always wanted to play, something I've always wanted to write, and that's like the stuff that I grew up on. You know, finding that dissonant, chaotic, hardcore sound. So was taking the influences from what I grew up on, and then, like I said, bringing in, I guess, more of a modern, heavy sound. So yeah, again, a lot of the bands, the early solid state bands, Under Oath, Norm Jean, Chariot, even Zayo was my first hard band. It went from, it was very, very weird that Zayo was my first heavy band that like won me over to metal, but, we don't sound anything like Zayo.
How does one in Bismarck, South Dakota, get a hold of some Zayo music back in the day?
Dude, I actually don't. It was really weird. I was at like some like camp or something, and somebody was talking about metal bands, and I don't even remember what I listened to at that time. I was young. I was probably 10 or 11. I was probably still listening to like Backstreet Boys back then. I remember hearing these guys talk about Zayo and like describing like what the music was like and the screaming and everything. And so I went home, and this is back like when you could look up music on Windows Media Player or whatever the heck it was. And I found this, and there was something about it that intrigued me. And I just got like, at first I was like, wow, what is this? Cause I had never heard anything like that before. And I grew up in a very conservative home. And I did my oldest brother listened to a lot of Metallica. So I did grow up listening to like Metallica and stuff like that. But when I heard Zayo, it was just something very intriguing to me. So I don't know, I started listening to it, and before I knew it, I was like, wow, this is awesome. And then I went to go to festivals every summer. There was a festival in Minnesota called Sunshine Festival, and they had an HM stage, and that was the hard music stage or whatever. And so I'd go just hang out there all day, and it was a lot of the early solid state and Facedown bands would play. That's where I first seen the Agony scene. Cool. And so I remember even thinking then, I was like, man, I really like the music, but the screaming wasn't, it took a little bit, I guess. Like, I didn't hate it, but I also was not sure about it. And then before I knew it, I was obsessed with it. And so, interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, very weird.
Yeah, that's a weird way to get into it, especially having to remember the entire time you're at camp and then coming home and looking it up.
Right.
And were you listening to like the full song on the Windows Media Player? Or did you like, I don't remember if it like would let you hear the full song or not.
You could, there was a way to download it, and it was such terrible, terrible quality. I remember just like listening to it in my car. It almost hurt my ears. I don't remember if it was like, it was kind of like a Napster kind of situation where there was some program where you could download, like one song or something from an artist or something. I don't remember how that worked, but I would make these mixtapes, and they sounded god awful because of the quality was so low, but it was the only way that I could obtain this music. So.
Nice.
Maybe I bought it. I don't remember. I feel like I'm not sure. But either way, I just remember it being really terrible quality.
Well, if you bought it, then you got ripped off with the terrible quality.
Yeah, for sure.
So what you were saying, like you were maybe trying to cover some other songs, like the Wayne Static song. What made you decide to choose the Deftones, and what made you decide to choose Shove It?
Sure. Well, Deftones is one of those bands that I did always enjoy. And I grew up listening to the radio a lot. And Deftones was a band that they played on the radio station around here a lot. And there was just always something about that band that I always, that always inspired me a lot about the way, like they were kind of like Slipknot in that way, that they were like one of the only heavy bands in the mainstream. But I didn't really like Slipknot growing up that much, but I did like Deftones a lot. So I guess just, and the older I got, like the last 10 years, I listened to so much Deftones, and I've even like just, it's weird because our style is nothing like Deftones, but kind of the core elements I feel like are still kind of there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. They've always just been a really big inspiration, I guess, to me musically. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to cover a song, I'd like to cover a band that I grew up listening to, a band that's always inspired me, you know. And I wasn't going to cover like one of the bands like Zao, because it wouldn't sound that much different.
Right.
You know, so I wanted to do I wanted to cover a song that would have been something that like, it's still like within, you know, the harder genre, but you know, it's got, we can actually change it up to make it something totally different at the same time. And then just that song, because that was like, that's one of their first songs that I think that song is just very iconic. Mm-hmm. You know,
interesting.
What is so, your, yeah. And it's a heavy, it's honestly like, it's a pretty heavy song.
Oh, for sure.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you guys,
especially for the time it came out, because it came out in 96 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like back then, that was like, dude, it was like, that's heavy stuff for 96.
Sure. It's still heavy now too, you know what I mean? So like
it
stands the test of time. It's crazy, mm-hmm, how often that band comes up on this podcast when, you know, I'm talking to other bands and stuff.
Yeah. I think they're huge inspiration for, I've talked to so many bands that like, yeah, that's, they're just a huge inspiration. It's just cool because they were doing something that was totally different from what other people are doing, and they made it. They made their own sound, and they're kind of an architects of their own genre in a way. So, anytime somebody does something like that big, you know, that can just like pull, that can just do whatever they want and make a huge, huge sound for themselves. Like, I think that's, people are always inspired by that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're also one of my favorite bands, and I try not to talk about them as much on here because like I said, they come up very often. They're so influential, yeah, you know, in so many different ways. Where, so my next question to you would be, what's your favorite Deftones album?
Oh, that's hard because there's like,
you're lucky. They're one of those bands. I asked 516 Silence to rank them, so because they
oh
yeah, so you're lucky I asked you your favorite. I learned,
I'm glad you didn't do that, because that would take all night. I'm just gonna say, I'm probably gonna say Diamond Eyes. I think that record, because I feel like a lot of their records have like four really good songs and then like six like filler songs. And I feel like Diamond Eyes, I can listen front to back and enjoy it all the way through. I don't think there's a bad song on that record.
I have to agree with what you're saying. I definitely got pulled back into being a Deftones fan when that album came out, because, mm-hmm, I mean, I listened to them in the early stages, White Pony, and then, mm-hmm, the one after White Pony. But then, like, Saturday Night Risk came out, and I was kind of, like, drifting away from them.
Sure.
And then I kind of didn't pay attention until Diamond Eyes came out. And ever since then, mm-hmm, it's been, like, non-stop,
yep.
But I agree that that's my favorite record too. I really like Gore that just came out too. So I foresee,
yep,
that
one. Gore being, is good.
I foresee that one being one of my favorites too. But I like the, mm-hmm, back end of the Deftones more than the front end, even though the front end is a lot heavier and it's still awesome. They don't make a bad record. That's, I'm just going to say that.
Right.
But yeah, I like their grooviness and the sexiness of their sound that they have, you know, they've,
yeah,
made over the years. And are you familiar with Loathe?
Yes. Yep. That's, yeah. When I heard Loathe, I was, that was actually, I'm relatively newer to Loathe. But yeah, they're definitely like chasing that like Deftones vibe, but they do it in such a little more, a more modern way,
right.
but it's really, really good. And I remember listening, I don't remember which low song it is. It's the really heavy one that has a lot of, the octave pedal stuff.
Right.
And I just remember listening to that song. I'm like, man, how did they write this song? It's very, very, very unique. And, very good. Yeah, that's all. That's all I'm trying to say.
I think the same thing. When I heard that, I know what song you're talking about. And when I heard it, I was thinking, like, how do you write this? You must just be like sitting at a computer, just messing around for hours and hours and stuff like that. But how do you guys write as a band? Do you make most of the ideas and then like everyone else kind of chimes in, or do you guys as a collective share ideas?
Sure. So I write a majority of everything. Like I said earlier, it started as a solo project of mine. So it was kind of like, I guess, my brainchild.
Mm-hmm. So you still follow that path even? Well, I guess because you have new members now too. So
yeah. Yep. So yeah, that's kind of been a common theme is it's kind of my job to make music, you know, here in the studio and stuff, be a producer. So, we'll always, come up with like creative ideas, I guess. Like the guys will give me input as we're recording stuff. And Brady still writes, he'll still write some fills and stuff like that. But for the main whole, yeah, I'm like the main writer, I guess.
Cool. So what, I guess you guys don't really have much planned other than, releasing, songs coming up, because obviously we are unsure as to when shows will come off, even though this podcast may come out a little later. I'm sure shows won't be coming.
Sure.
Won't be going on.
Yeah. Yet. It's at this point, we still have no plan other than we are writing a new record right now, or actually it's pretty much written. We are going to be recording another EP in May, most likely. And then when that'll come out, we have no idea. Probably sometime around touring season, but that might not be back for, you know, till October. So everything's just up in the air at this point, I guess. Cool. The only thing that we really have planned is that we're recording this new EP, and it will be out sometime this year, most likely. And then, we'll be shooting some music videos and stuff like that. But as far as, you know, touring and all that stuff, it's all still up in the air, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. But, when you record, is it just you recording, or do you have, the guys come in and record their parts?
I'll still have the guys come in and record, their parts. Well, at least Brady. For the last record, Waste, Zach and Caden had quit by then. So I just recorded the bass and guitar on that one. And most likely I'll just record the guitar and bass on, the next one, or this next upcoming one. But Brady still records all his stuff.
Waste is my favorite of the two EPs. I just wanted to throw that in there.
Awesome. Thank you. Actually, mine too. I think that for some reason that, it just resonated more with me, like the style of writing, maybe, I would say with Prettiest of Things. I do really like that record, but I felt like I was chasing something that wasn't, necessarily like my style of writing. Cause I was writing more structured, which was kind of the goal. It's like, okay, Prettiest of Things is going to be very, very structured front to back. And we're going to add a little bit more melodic stuff. And, although I don't hate that stuff. Like that's great. It was fun to write, but that's not like the core of my writing ability, or that's not like what I want to be as a musician. So I think Waste, I feel like hit home more for me, just like my style of writing, I guess is all I'm trying to say.
I get that. So I would be remiss to not inquire about the other members quitting. Is there a bad backstory to that, or is it on good terms?
No, everything is good terms. It's really just, they just wanted to do something. So the thing with Zach was he'd always, juggled doing, video stuff and doing band stuff. And he just wanted to go, he just wanted to do one thing 100%. And that was the main thing. And then, Caden just like, he's like, he was kind of at a place in his life where he's like, he just kind of felt like he wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. And since Zach was quitting, he's like, well, if Zach is stepping down, I think now is a good time for me to step down too. Cool. So going forward, we'll see how things, pan out. It might just be Earthgrounds just might be kind of like a hired gun situation. or maybe we'll find some new members. I haven't really pursued new members yet, just because of the situation that the situation of the industry. But either way, we're just going to keep on rocking. But I wouldn't say there's any bad blood or anything like that.
Cool. Were you worried or anything like that? Like, were you thinking that it was the end of Earth Groans, or did you always know you were going to move forward with it?
No, I've known from the beginning that that I was going to keep going, because every band I've been in, being in a band is a very fragile thing. It's very hard because you have to have four or five guys all in the same mindset for the same amount of time. You know, it's very fragile because one member could be like, you know, I'm going to dip. And then if that person dips, the whole band could die, mm-hmm. you know? So I was like, well, I'm going to make a machine that can withstand members, losing members, stuff like that. So I had a majority of the gear already because of my studio. I'm like, I'm just going to make it so that even if we do lose a member, it's like we don't lose any of the gear. Like, I already have all the gear. I own the band and trailer. So I want this band to be able to, I guess, last the test of time. And so, you know, if members come and go, which it's pretty inevitable for that to happen. So I was like, I don't want that to be an issue for why the band would break up. So moving forward, I just want to have all the gear in place so that if somebody has a change of heart, they can dip out and we can bring somebody else in out. So obviously I was not stoked. I mean, A, they were good friends of mine. And B, like, we had worked, we had done this band as like a well-oiled machine for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it's like having a change up now, it'll be hard to get used to. So I'm not going to say that I won't like miss those guys or anything.
Sure.
But yeah, so it'll be hard going forward, but I think it's just how it is sometimes. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's how the cookie crumbles, they say sometimes. But
yes,
you got to pick things up and keep going. But you know, the hired gun situation might not be a bad idea. You know, that's one way to definitely, you know, run a band, a project, an operation, a business. So, you know, it's well thought out that's good that you've thought that out like that. But so outside of music and recording and, you know, being in the band and music in general, what makes up Jeremy's, you know, day-to-day life?
Sure. Well, I mean, honestly, music is a very, very large part of it. The minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed, there's usually music playing, whether it's me playing music, like actually playing music, or I'm recording music, or I'm mixing music, or I'm just like listening for pleasure. But art in general, just creating, I think that's just who I am. I love creating, whether it be music or art. So I do a lot of traditional tattoo style art.
Cool.
So I paint. I'm very heavily tattooed. So tattoo culture has been a really cool, fun thing for me for the last like 15 years.
Frozen. Damn. Let's see if he comes back.
Being a part of the tattoo culture. And I would never, a lot of people ask me if I'd ever be a tattoo artist because I do a lot of tattoo art. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say no. Definitely. I don't want to deal with people's fluids and blood. And
yeah, it takes a certain individual that wants to get that.
Yeah, bad tramp stamp ideas and stuff like that.
I'm
going
to have to tell you, Jeremy, you did break up there for a little bit, but we caught some of that. So forgive me if you already said this, but what style of tattoo tattoo painting do you go to? Is it like old school Sailor Jerry's, or is it like?
Yeah, it's like old school Sailor Jerry, American traditional.
So you paint like the style. Flash, you know, like the flash sheets and stuff, or is it?
Yep.
Just,
yeah. So that's pretty much what I paint. Just like I'll paint like, you know, like just a traditional rose or something like that, you know, and then I sell some of them. I keep some of them. I just hang up in my house and stuff. But I also enjoy doing like photography and like videography. I don't do a lot of that because I don't have a lot of time for that stuff. But like during COVID, I had a ton of time. And so I was doing like, some photography for my family and for friends, just to help pay bills and stuff. But I genuinely do enjoy just being able to create, you know, whatever that may be. So
yeah, that's pretty cool, man. As long as you have outlets and that you're, you know, being able to be creative, yeah. That's a good way to deal with everyday life stress in general.
Yeah. Yeah. If I don't have the opportunity to create, I feel like it does, I kind of fall apart as a human. So it's just a large part of who I am and what I strive to be.
How do you deal with just the very cold weather and just living under snow? I feel like you would just be living under snow like a good chunk of the, you know, year.
Yeah. Well, I built a porch on my house so that I didn't ever have to walk outside to get from my house into my studio.
Nice.
So during the winter, I don't go outside very often and I don't leave, but I hate the cold. Like, I'm totally like a lizard. Like, I was meant to be in the desert someplace. And someday I hope that I can move to, like, I would totally move to like Phoenix, Arizona and just live in the desert, because I'm all about that.
I was going to ask where your, you know, your destination of choice would be if you could live in one area, where would it be? But
yeah, I feel like, I think the Southwest is, I've toured the whole US at this point and I love like every different area. I can find beauty in all of it, but I think the Southwest, just because I'm obsessed with heat and the desert. So
yeah.
I think that's where I'll probably move someday.
We got the heat down here, but we also have the humidity, so it's a
little humidity is brutal.
Yeah,
I every time we go down to the Southeast, like, I just don't even try and style my mustache because it's just like poof,
yeah,
like turns into this giant ball of fur. So I couldn't have a mustache if I moved down to Florida. That's sure.
Another reason why I also tried, because when I was growing it out originally, I wanted a longer mustache because, you know, you want to. Yep. You want to daydream about like entering some beard mustache competition and like
yep.
being like placing, you know, that's the point of like
yep.
growing a real, you know, a beard out. You want it to look good. So
yeah,
I wanted the whole like, you know, little mustache
fancy thing. Stash.
It would never, yep. never happen. And that makes, you know, makes sense that my beard was always frizzy anyway. So
yeah,
that's kind of a lame. That's why I would always itch.
So oh yeah.
Every day you wake up, I'm going to shave it. But luckily, you don't seem to have that problem. So
no, I'm also I do compete here in South Dakota. I am a two year in a row champion of South Dakota mustache category.
Well, congratulations, so. Jeremy. I didn't know. we were talking to verified bona fide mustache man.
You better believe it, buddy. Yeah, nice. I got plaques on the wall to prove it.
That's amazing. That's
probably
amazing.
My best accomplishment in life.
Hear, hear to that. I'll drink some. I'll drink to that as well. Well, we're getting to about that time, man. Is there anything else maybe on the, you know, horizon marketing wise? Oh, there you are. Hello.
Hold on. I got back. Okay, you're back.
We're back.
Just got bad. Bad reception there for a bit. It was mega laggy, but you're back, so you can continue.
I was just saying, it's about that time to wrap it down anyway.
Okay. my computer or my phone was like, nah, dude, we done.
No, it's cool. It's just about that yep. time anyway. We kind of aim for about 45-ish minutes, and we're running a little over that. But my cool. thing was, you know, is there anything else on the other than the album, you know? No, because there's nothing going on. You have the album coming out.
Nah.
There's no touring plans coming on. So let's try to end this on a bright note. Is there any, whatever. Why don't you end it on a bright note with some positive information for the fans?
Sure. The industry is coming back, baby. Even though those venues have gotten shut down and stuff like that, I'm fully optimistic that things are going to open up soon. And once they do open up, I think that people are going to buy back those venues. And I think that the industry is going to have a really great positive surge because people miss the music. They miss the community that's involved there. And that's a large part of, I guess, what I believe the hardcore community is and what it was established on is it's just this great community that people come together and they get to enjoy music and also build relationship and do life together. And I believe that's fully going to come back. So get stoked for that. I mean, I know that the world is in a weird place. I know that there's a lot of negativity out there, but I fully believe that things are going to come back and they're going to come back strong. So I think get excited for that because I think it's going to be rad.
Yeah, man, that is a great way to look at things. And I think that's the first time I heard, you know, someone thinking that the venues will be bought back. But I agree with you that it will be it'll probably be a surge for all entertainment in general. It'll be crazy. The podcast I record right before, David from Full of Hell and Jarhead Fertilizer brought up a great point that, you know, he was saying, like, I wonder what kind of restrictions will be in place once things do go back and the industry does go back. And, you know, I wonder if that will affect it in some way too going forward. But everyone is definitely wanting that to happen, wanting shows and everything to come back.
Nobody knows until it happens. But I feel like since the vaccine is going to be in place, there's no reason for there to be restrictions set up. So we're going to hope for that. But either way, I think things are going to be good. So
yeah, man. Well,
I like to be optimistic.
I'll be optimistic with you as well. So
sweet.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. I hope you.
Thanks for having me, man.
I hope you guys stay warm up there, and I hope you keep creating art as well. And I hope you keep creating awesome music. I think everyone should definitely check out both EPs, but Waste is my personal favorite. It's one of my favorite albums of 2020. And definitely the Deftones cover is great. It's definitely it's like the original, but also not like the original. So it's great in both ways. It's reminiscent, but it's also Earthgrown style too. So
yes. Yep.
All right, man. Well, have a great time. Have a great night, and thanks for coming on.
Yep. Thanks, brother. Good night to you.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen, and wherever you get your podcasts.